the Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Friday, April 3rd, 2009. The time is about 3:37 p.m. And we have a quorum to conduct business. We have Senator Huggins, Senator Stevens, Senator Wagner, Senator French, and myself, Wilkowski. Senator McGuire is excused. And we have a number of bills and resolutions that are up today. And the first one is going back to a hearing that we had on Wednesday, I believe, which is SB 150. And that is a bill that has been proposed by Senator McGuire. And we could have Trevor please come up. And we're working from version S, I believe. If you could put yourself on the record, Trevor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Trevor Fulton. I'm staff for Senator Lisa McGuire.
And we held the bill just so that members could have an opportunity to review it and see if there were any questions or concerns. I haven't heard anything from any of the members to this point. There's one change that I think we're in agreement with the sponsor on changing, and that is on page 2, line 8. Does everyone have backslash S?
Sierra.
Okay, page Sierra, yeah. We had a conversation and you're in agreement that there was simply a mistake made and that should be an and for an or. Would you agree with that?
That's correct, okay. Mr. Chairman. And the sponsor fully agrees with you and appreciates the good eye.
Okay, and so could I get a motion to change the and?
So moved.
Okay, thank you. And we're substituting and for an or on page 2, line 8. Is there any objection to that? Okay, seeing none, that amendment is adopted. Is there any discussion on the bill now as amended? Could I get, if the committee so desires, is there a motion to move the bill onto the next committee of referral as amended?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move that CS for Senate Bill 150 version Sierra be removed from committee as amended with individual comments.
Great. Thank you, Senator Huggins. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion is approved and the bill will move on to the next committee of referral.
Thank you, Mr.
So we'll pass out the letter. Thank you, Trevor. Okay, next up, we are going to a resolution that was before us maybe two meetings ago regarding House Joint Resolution 21. Does everyone have a copy of that in front of them? And we had a bit of testimony on that resolution, and the version before us is backslash E. And is there any discussion on moving this resolution? Yes, Senator Wagner.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was kind of surprised we didn't move it last time. It is a resolution, after all. You know, we know what happens to resolutions. But you know, I've kind of got mixed feelings on this. About half the people that I associate with want it, and half of them don't. So it's kind of a win lose or lose win. And I'm not going to make a big deal about it. I'm going to send it out under my name with a no rec, but I'm not going to speak against it. Okay. I think it's something that needs to be addressed. And I heard this when I was chairman here 4 years ago, and I was really surprised at the lack of public testimony, because 4 years ago when I had this bill in my committee, there were 30 or 35, maybe 40 people testified from Kodiak alone, and a lot more from Homer and other places. I'm not sure they're aware that this resolution is going through the legislature. And of course, mine was a bill, not a resolution, but it was the same topic. So I just wonder where all the interested parties are at right now.
Thank you, Senator Wagner. Can I get, if there's no further discussion, what's the will of the body? Is there a will to move this out of committee? Yes, Senator Wagner.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move House Joint Resolution number 21 to to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations.
Thank you. Is there any objection to the motion? Okay, seeing none, the House Joint Resolution 21 is moved out of committee. Next up, we have HJR 7 endorsing Anwar Leasing, and I'll just say for the next three resolutions, we've typically had a process where, and I think it's a good procedure, where we typically hold resolutions and bills at least for one committee hearing, so that we can address any concerns that may arise from the committee and from comments. So it's the intent, it's our intent to hear these today and hold them over the weekend, and if committee members have any input they'd like to give, we'll be happy to try to address them. I just think that's better policy. So HJR 7 endorsing Anwar Leasing, is the bill sponsor here, or the resolution sponsor?
Can I have a brief at ease, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Well, brief at ease. And as I mentioned, it's our intent to hear all the resolutions. There's three of them before us today. Hold them to the next hearing, see if committee members have any comments, suggestions, and then try to move them next week. So, Representative Millett, please start out with HJR 7.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Representative Therese Millett from House District 30. I'm here to present the CS for House Joint Resolution Number 7, urging the United States Congress to pass legislation to open the coastal plain of Anwar to oil and gas exploration and development. I believe that HJR 7 is important at this time. We have to let Congress know that we are concerned about the possible closure of Anwar, and that it's important to Alaskans to have that ability to develop our federal lands for the benefit of all Alaskans and for the United States of America. Anwar still holds the biggest reserve for oil and gas development in the United States, and the oil industry and the State Department consider the coastal plain to have the highest potential for continued discovery. We have looked over this resolution and added a few things that we think will help our state our case. We've added a whereas about directional drilling. We've lowered the impact area of what producers would need to develop down to 2,000 acres. And we think that this is a good resolution. We'd like to just let Congress know that we're still aware that Anwar is important to Alaska and have our voice heard.
Great, thank you. Mm-hmm. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor, as resolution sponsor? Yes, Senator Wagner.
I know industry has said time and again that 2,000 acres is enough land to develop. That's the footprint they would put on this. I happen to have a family ranch. 2,000 acres has been in our family for a long time. 2,000 acres is not a lot of land, no matter how it lays, lengthwise and width. I'm just wondering if that is enough. I don't know. I just throw that out because I'm somewhat skeptical that 2,000 acres is enough to produce the billions of barrels of oil that people are estimating is under there. That's just a comment. And it just kind of flies in the face of reality because a small area.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Wagner, it's a good point. And at one point it was 7,000 acres, but with the technology advancements that they've made in oil and gas exploration and production, they actually have reduced it down to 1,642 acres, and we rounded up to 2,000 just to give them that little window of.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please.
My point about the logistics of the pipe yards and everything else you need, it isn't the drilling. It's the support service and everything. I just question whether that's enough or not, but I'm not going to try and offer an amendment because I don't know what the right number is. I just want us to be aware that there may be some question in people's minds about that.
Thank you. Yes, Senator French.
I want to just thank the representative for bringing this to us. I've been a big, strong supporter of opening ANWR drilling for a long, long time. I was just thinking that I was working on the North Slope when I got my undergraduate degree from UAA, and I took a speech class, and the speech, one of the things you have to do to get your little check off to finish your credits there is to give a persuasive speech to the class of students, and I picked opening ANWR, which was a little bit controversial there at UAA. But I remember doing my little pie charts about how little area was involved and, you know, a little trying to describe that it wasn't the whole ANWR, it was just the little 1,002 area. It wasn't even the whole 1,002 area, it's just a little tiny slice of that. And anyway, I commend you for bringing this to us. I do just want to maybe toss an idea to you as the sponsor about one thing that I've been greatly concerned about recently is, for example, at Point Thompson, we leased that area to Exxon, and lo and behold, they sat on it for a long, long time. And we've sort of pressed this idea that the duty to develop is kind of inherent in any lease. It's in our lease. Spencer Hosey says so, and a bunch of other people say so. But I just wonder whether we shouldn't also kind of push the idea a little harder and say, not only do we want you to open it, we want you to get moving on those leases and bring the oil out of the ground, sort of a duty to develop idea. So I'm sort of thinking of a conceptual amendment. I just wanted to ask you as the sponsor of this resolution whether you'd be amenable to that, whether you wouldn't want that, and so I just want to hear your views. Thanks.
Through the chair, Senator French, we did discuss that in the House and actually put a request in to the Federal Leasing Department to find out if they've ever had a problem with duty to produce or if they carried that language in the leases. And lo and behold, they do. And in their leases, it's an implied duty to produce. It doesn't necessarily use that language, but the federal government has never had one lease where they had an issue or went to court or sued over on their federal leases with the investment that people make when they buy a federal lease and the strict oversight that they have, much like our leases, in following through with development plans. They said that we got a letter back saying that it was not an issue that they had ever taken up, and that so with that.
Follow up, Senator French.
Just to clarify, it sounded like you said that they have leases like ours in which the duty to produce is not stated in the lease anywhere, but it's implied. Am I right on that?
Through the chair, Senator French, yes, it is not. It's not language like we had talked about the duty to produce, and their answer back to me was they never felt that it was something that they needed to put in a lease because they never had a problem with it, and they didn't understand why would we do that if they've never had an issue in all the leasing that they've done on federal lands because of the investment and because of the time and because of the plans of development that the federal government follows with their leases, much like we do with our leases. And so they
just so I'm clear, I mean, I don't mean to take up your time, but I think what you're saying is it's not explicit in the lease. Is that right?
Through the chair, yes.
But it is implicit in the lease. That is, we all sort of believe that there's this implied duty to produce.
Through the chair, yes.
But that since they've never had a problem, they don't think there's any reason to write it down on a piece of paper.
Through the chair, they have never added that language into federal leases.
Okay, got it. And I guess, and I appreciate that, so we're all super clear, and I don't mean to belabor any point. I just, but I guess I would say I know that some people, and maybe they have a different view, so I'd love to see the documentation you have, and I'll let this point go for now, but I just know that some people have criticized the slow development on federal lands and have believed that there's oil companies sitting on federal land leases and not moving. Department of Interior has one view, other people have another. I'll read your documents and decide what I want to do with my little idea. Thank you.
And through the chair, Senator French, one of the things that was interesting about the federal leases is they get given back a lot more than state leases do. Because of
handed back, like we don't want
it. Handed back, them. Correct.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Sure.
Right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see the reference to directional drilling technology in your sponsor statement. Does it appear in the resolution in any place? Or,
through the chair, page 3, line 10. Whereas the oil and gas industry is developing directional drilling technology that will allow horizontal drilling in a responsible manner by minimizing the development footprint within the ANWR and its directional drilling technology. May be capable of drilling from outside of the boundaries of the Area 1002 study area.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any further questions? Yes, Senator Wagner.
And this may not be the right venue to put this in, but just throw it out for you. There was also an agreement years ago between Senator Scoop Jackson from Washington and Senator Ted Stevens from Alaska that this would continue indefinitely to become an area to be explored by oil, for oil and oil produced from this area, no matter what happened in that wildlife refuge. Is there any chance you can work something, a whereas on that in there? Because I think it's important because it's a part of the history of the overall ANWR battle and the discussions, and it's been discussed, and it's on the record in the Senate I don't know how many times. So might just take a look at that one. And I don't know how they look at one senator deceased and one out of office, but that is a fact of the whole history of it.
Thank you. Okay. Did you have a question, Senator Huggins?
Yeah. Yes. Just an educational question for me, hopefully. Not to belabor who does oppose ANWR, that's the reason we're doing this, but David Letterman always talked about the top 10. In your research, did you run across the top 10 reasons that people oppose ANWR opening, or the top 6 or 5? Could you share a couple of those with us?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, there's several reasons that people oppose ANWR. Environmental concerns are of the top. Wildlife questions and how it impacts wildlife. One of the most interesting ones to me was just keeping ANWR designated a refuge without any footprint at all, with no explanation of other than it was just a lot of land that other places in the United States don't have. There was some concern from the Gwich'in tribes on ANWR and what that would do to their lifestyle. And so those are the things that we've seen the most in the opposition to opening ANWR.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. We do have a number of people online to testify. And let's go to Fairbanks first, where we have Chris Cannon. Are you there, Chris?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, if you could put yourself on the record, and welcome to the Senate Resources Committee. And try to limit testimony to about 3 minutes, if you could, just because we do have a number of people online.
Okay, sure. I'm opposed to the resolution. My name is Chris Cannon from Fairbanks. I'm just representing myself. I also testified early to the House Committee. I'll keep this short. I guess I'll just leave with a few open-ended questions. If I'm not mistaken, I think the coastal plain is about the last 5% of land that's not open legally to leasing. And I have a question, how much is enough? Is this how we want to generate our state revenue? Because I don't really think it's an energy issue. If you look closely at EIA data, I just don't see the energy as a major argument to open up the refuge. All I see is a big state dollar sign, and I don't see that that's a renewable source of revenue. And I'm testifying because it's important to me, and I hope that the folks down in the committee can understand that. And thank you for listening. That's all.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions? Seeing yes, there is.
Senator Wagner. Question. Yeah, Chris, what's your vocation? Where do you work? If I might ask.
The Gwich'in Steering Committee.
Okay.
And for about 8 months of the year. The other part of the year, I work as a professional mountain guiding climbs on Denali.
How many children do you have in schools?
I don't have any.
Okay. Thank you.
Chris, thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Lucy Beach.
Hello. My name is Lucy Beach, and I am the executive director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee. And what is referred to in the committee as ANWR or the 1002 area, is known as Ishikwatsan Gwendai Gwinlit, the sacred place where life begins. This is the calving and nursery grounds of the porcupine caribou bird, the Gwich'in people of, I belong to the Gwich'in tribe, have depended on since time immemorial. We have stories in my own family of three famines that we survived, and we didn't go into the calving and nursery grounds because we consider it so sacred. And most tribal people believe that spawning grounds, calving grounds, birthing areas are sacred places that humans have no business desecrating. The porcupine caribou herd has sustained us for over 20,000 years. As an Alaska Native, I see so many things that Alaska Natives have given up in the state of Alaska. We're looking at salmon being impacted. Today I saw that in 30 years, it looks like the ice on the Beaufort Sea is gonna be gone. We have incredible, especially since Prudhoe Bay began, seen incredible human tragedy as the rise of suicide. Alaska Natives have the highest in the country, drug and alcohol problems. And we keep hearing that if we can only do one more development, one more thing, it's going to make our life better. But all I see is our lives are getting worse. On the North Slope, with the existing development, there's emitted 41,408 tons of nitrous oxide and 779 tons of sulfur dioxide, a key cause of acid rain. This is just one thing. I recently saw a photograph of a pipeline that had ruptured, and the fix on that ruptured pipeline was duct tape. Recently, our friends in the Prince William Sound area experienced the 20th anniversary of the devastation of the Exxon Valdez spill. How do you fix that mess? We're not willing to have a place we consider sacred to be gambled with. And no matter how you term it or how you say it, there continues to be spills, corrosion, problems, human error. This is one place that needs to be left off limits. I thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, I can.
Thank you, Lucy. Are there any questions? Seeing none. I appreciate your testimony. And next up, we have Pam Miller in Fairbanks.
Hello, Chairman Willikowski. Oh, I don't need that one. Oh, okay. Thank you for this opportunity to comment. I'm with the Northern Alaska Environmental Center here in Fairbanks, and I'm representing myself and our members, of which most are in Alaska. And I'd like to place the context of this issue in what we are excited about in Alaska today. You just passed a bill that will address alternative energy resources. There's many other bills you're considering about renewable energy, weatherization, energy efficiency, and measures that will make the lives better for people and communities throughout the state. We heartily endorse those kinds of efforts as we see as the future for energy in Alaska and sustainable. I also would like to put the context of what's gone on this week in the news. This week, the state announced a civil action against BP for continuing poor maintenance, negligence, spills, up until they reported one from the 19th of February on the North Slope. And I looked through the records of the presentations that were provided by the state regarding the status of oversight of pipelines safety bill reduction, and it's a far cry from what's in that civil complaint. And I urge you all to read it before you consider opening up this one protected part of Alaska that even the state Department of Natural Resources admits is the only area on the North Slope protected for its habitat values. I would also like to say that part of the state civil action was the fact that there, when they unwrapped the pipes to find out where the spills were, where the leaks were, and there were dozens, that the workers were exposed to asbestos and it was released to the air in contradiction of the Clean Air Act. So we're talking about a situation where there's existing poor management ongoing in our state today, as there has been chronically over the last decade. And we know there are some new initiatives of the state in place for the state's open lands. But given that we're not adequately managing the areas that we have open to oil and gas already, it seems fruitless to go into this area that's been protected for wildlife since 1960. There's also decades of oil yet to be produced on the state lands, and why are we going to give industry another area outside the area we already have dedicated for revenues for the state of Alaska? Finally, I will say the 2,000 acres argument is pretty specious, because the area that's proposed to be open for oil and gas drilling is 1.5 million acres. To get the oil out of the scattered spots that USGS says there might be oil would require roads, pipelines, storage facilities, and the like throughout the area, threatening polar bears, caribou from two herds, as well as migratory birds and the subsistence way of life of local people, the Gwich'in and the Inupiaq people. I'll save the rest of my comments for the next bill that you'll bring up. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Any questions by the committee? Okay, seeing none. Next, we have on the off-nets, Carl Portman.
My name is Carl Portman, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Resource Development Council. I appreciate the opportunity to comment on HJR 7. I am testifying in support of the resolution. RDC is a statewide nonprofit membership-funded organization founded in 1975. Our membership is comprised of individuals and companies from Alaska's oil and gas, mining, timber, tourism, and fishing industries, as well as Native corporations, local communities, organized labor, and industry support firms. RDC's purpose is to link these diverse interests together to encourage a strong, diversified private sector in Alaska and expand the state's economic base through responsible development of our natural resources. The 1002 area of ANWR is considered the nation's most promising onshore oil and gas prospect. There is strong support across Alaska for environmentally responsible development of the oil and gas resources beneath the coastal plain. Such development could play a large role in Alaska's future prosperity, create thousands of jobs across Alaska and the nation, and reduce our reliance on foreign oil. Even under a full leasing scenario and assuming development of major prospects, 92% of ANWR would remain closed to exploration. As you heard earlier, the actual development footprint could be limited to 2,000 acres of the coastal plains, 1.5 million acres. The footprint would be well under 1% of the entire refuge. I would like to point out that given the demand for energy will rise as the economy recovers, America must continue to pursue new oil and gas development, even as the nation slowly transitions to new energy sources of the future. Increased emphasis on renewable energy should not preclude or require less oil and gas development. America needs more of both to reduce its reliance on foreign oil. Even under the most optimistic projections issued by the Obama administration, America will be dependent on fossil fuels for nearly 80% of its energy consumption in 2030. As a result, for every barrel of oil America refuses to develop domestically, it will have little choice but to import an equal amount from overseas, where weaker environmental regulations often apply. We encourage the committee to vote in favor of this resolution, and I thank you for your consideration.
Carl, thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll move next to Adrian Herrera.
Yes. Thank you very much, committee members. This is Adrian Herrera with Arctic Power. I'm a 30-year resident of Anchorage, Alaska, and I currently head the Arctic Power office in Washington, D.C., where I am currently. As many of you know, Arctic Power has been arguing the Anwar issue on Capitol Hill for over 12 years now. We are a non-for-profit grassroots organization, and we essentially form coalition bodies of other nonprofit groups around the nation to work the Anwar issue on Capitol Hill successfully. Arctic Power views this resolution put forth by Representative Millett as crucial to the support of the effort to open the Tenantu area. In debate on the floor of the Senate and the House of Representatives on Capitol Hill, a resolution was passed by the Alaska legislature weigh a great deal in this contentious debate. In our democratic nation, states' rights and views are strongly promoted and respected on Capitol Hill. The majority of Americans support the opening of the Tenantu area, and yet those who do not support this issue, once told that a majority of Alaskans and the government of Alaska support this issue, more often than not change their minds to the affirmative. The Anwar issue has and will continue to be extremely contentious and active in the future. This is partly because it is the number one fundraising mechanism for the environmental lobby, which raises and spends millions on the Anwar fight annually. Also, it's obviously because, as Carl Portman stated, it is the number one most geologically promising area on the North American continent for a super large conventional oil field. Most recently on Capitol Hill, Representative Markey of Massachusetts and Senator Lieberman of Connecticut introduced bills in their respective bodies to lock up the Tenantu area with a wilderness designation. Representative Markey and also Representative Inslee of Washington have circulated a letter around Congress which has received 70 signatures so far, and this letter will be delivered to the White House to put off limits the entire Arctic area, both on and offshore, to all forms of commercial development. Using both wilderness designation and national monument status designation, this is a very real threat to the state of Alaska and its sovereignty over its lands. The resolutions put forth today on the Anwar represent the voice of the people of Alaska and the groups and members of Congress Alaskans care and want this issue dealt with responsibly. These issues will be carried by Arctic Power to help rally our coalition of nationally based organizations that we call upon every year to help pass pro-Anwar legislation and fight wilderness designation. Similarly, these resolutions will be carried and quoted by our delegation, Senator Begich, Senator Murkowski, and Representative Don Young, through the halls of Congress and also to the White House in fighting this fight. It is vital that the people of Alaska's voice be heard above the rhetoric that makes up much of the Anwar debate in Congress. We at Arctic Power strongly support and urge the passage of these resolutions. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Herrera. Any questions? Okay, seeing none, is there anyone else online wishing to testify? Hearing none, is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public hearing. Any final questions for the resolution sponsor? Okay, we're going to hold this resolution over. And there were a couple points raised by Senator Wagner and Senator French, and perhaps we can all get together. And
any letters you have from the Department of Interior, I'd appreciate.
Okay. Great. Okay, thank you. Let's move on to the next resolution, and that is HJR 18, opposing Anwar Wilderness Designation. And we have Representative Millett again.
Thank you. For the record again, my name is Representative Sharice Millett from House District 30, and with me is my Chief of Staff, Jeff Turner. For all the reasons you heard prior for HJR 7, we're bringing HJR 18 forward to urge the United States Congress to reject any legislation seeking wilderness designation for the Area 1002 of Anwar. One of the things I'd like to point out, last year in Congress, the number one issue with the most active legislation was Anwar, with 19 pieces of legislation either to open Anwar or to close Anwar or to make it a wilderness designation. This is a very active subject on Capitol Hill. It is a contentious issue. It is one where I think that Alaskans' voices need to be heard. And mostly, we need to make sure that making Anwar a wilderness designated area cuts off any opportunity for Alaska to develop the oil and gas reserves in that area. I think it may be even more important than opening ANWR at this point in time, because closing it, once it's closed, it would be one enormous task to reopen and undesignate it as wilderness. So with this, I would urge you to support HJR 18.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Any questions by the committee? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to public testimony. And let's start with Carl Portman. Are you there, Mr. Portman?
This is Carl Portman, Deputy Director of the Resource Development Council. I am testifying in support of the resolution. A wilderness designation would preclude future action by Congress to provide for environmentally responsible exploration and production of oil and gas resources in ANWR. Federal wilderness, which should not be expanded to include the 1002 area, given the coastal plain, is considered the nation's most promising onshore oil and gas prospect. I'd also like to point out that the 1002 area was intentionally excluded from ANWR's large wilderness block in 1980 through a compromise that allowed ANILCA to move forward. The ANILCA compromise led to the conversion of the Alaska Wildlife Ranch into what is now a refuge, ANWR, and doubled its size. We encourage the committee to vote in favor of this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Portman. Next up, we have Adrian Herrera.
Thank you, committee members. This is, again, Adrian Herrera from Washington, D.C., from the Arctic Power Offices. We would like to state strong support for this resolution. Wilderness designation, once it is achieved on a parcel of federal land, is extremely difficult to undo. So in our view, this is a one-shot deal. If wilderness designation, a builder's bill succeeds in Congress, it will be near impossible for the state of Alaska or any entity to overturn that designation on the land. It is effectively locked up forevermore. So we very much strongly support the state's view in this regard and also strongly support the passage of this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll go to Fairbanks now, where we have Pam Miller.
Hello. Thank you, Chairman, for this opportunity to speak. I'm Pam Miller from the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. We oppose both these resolutions. I would like to point out that it was the Republican President Eisenhower who established the Arctic National Wildlife Range in 1960 for its wilderness, wildlife, and recreational values, and that included the coastal plain. They recognized the value of the rivers flowing out of the Brooks Range to the Arctic Ocean lagoons. They also recognized the goal of having an intact ecosystem, of which the coastal plain is the biological heart. That's a commonly heard expression, but what it means is that it's where the animals spend the critical time, as Lucy Beach mentioned from the Gwich'in Steering Committee, for giving birth, for the bird nesting, for the caribou, which gather. And it is an integral part of the Arctic Refuge. I will also note that it would happen to have been withdrawn at the same time as statehood, and at that time, it was a very brilliant balancing act, because the state of Alaska got 20 million acres, and it got the prize. It got Prudhoe Bay. There is nothing that USGS believes would compare to that very giant field in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. It's part of the reason why it was set aside at that time. Sure, there may be some oil potential there, but we need to look to the future, to what really will help Alaska get away from this distraction of one very small part of the state and look at what it has throughout the whole state in renewable energy, in saving energy. And we've already saved conservation will save more imports by 2030, 17 times more imports than the most optimistic projections of drilling in the Arctic Refuge. So this is a landmark issue. It is a very important choice. Many Alaskans want to see this area protected, and I hope your committee will represent our views as well, which are not represented by these resolutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. And there's a question from Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Miller, I have two questions for you. One, you mentioned that the coastal plain is the heart of the heart of ANWR, but maybe you can just tell me, because I really don't think I know the answer to this. What is the degree of overlap between the area that you would call the coastal plain and the 1002 area? Is the coastal plain twice as big as the 1002 area? Four times as big? Is it all inside the 1002 area? That's my first question.
Anoka, and the 1002 area is the same as the coastal plain in that act. But as far as a landmark feature, and actually most of that coastal plain habitat is within the 1002 area. It's a very narrow area, strip of land north of the mountains. So there is a small strip that is designated wilderness already along the border with Canada. I don't know if that answers your question.
I was hoping for something a little more mathematical, but that's fine.
The 1002 area is 1.5 million acres, and all of the geographic feature called the coastal plain, the wet lakes, the places that are prime for bird nesting are all within that area.
So just so I'm clear, you're saying that no portion of the coastal plain is outside the 1002 area?
Like I said, it's like Prudhoe Bay as a feature. It's an actual bay like Prince William Sound has bays. It is also an oil field. It's also the term that is commonly used to describe all the oil fields at Prudhoe Bay. So the coastal plain has those two different definitions. But coastal plain under Anoka is the same as the 1002 area in Anoka.
Very good. Thank you. That was my first question, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Second question. The first whereas clause on page 2, number 1, outlines, in essence, a compromise, a deal that was struck in 1980. And to my mind, a deal is a deal. The deal was you get 17,000 acres designated wilderness, and we get 1.5 million acres that might someday be open for oil drilling. My question is why change that deal?
United States, the entire coastal plain area, and it prohibited by law oil and gas leasing, development, and production from the entire Arctic Refuge. That's a very strict standard. It is a higher standard than any other wildlife refuge in the country has, except for the portions that are designated wilderness. And it was a very unusual situation. The House of Representatives voted twice to make the coastal plain wilderness. It was the lame duck deal that resulted in this law. But the plain language of the law is clear, and if there was a backroom promise, that's very different than what is in the public record concerning this 1002 area. Thank you.
Thank you.
And before I get to Senator Huggins, I neglected to mention that Senator Bundy has been here since the beginning of the committee, and apologize for that, Senator Bundy. And also, Senator Menard has joined us some time ago. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pam, is Charlie Huggins here from Wasilla. I assume you support directional drilling, is that correct?
In the state lands? Great be not the issue to me.
Yeah, how about 1002?
I support protecting the entire coastal plain in its intact state for its purpose today, which is as a wildlife refuge with the primary purpose of management for fish and wildlife. And I believe that the state has adequate lands for its purpose. There's also over 100 million acres already leased on the North Slope outside of the 1002 area on land and in the ocean. And I think that the Arctic Refuge is a very special place and deserves to be protected, and no technology is adequate to protect that land today.
Okay, so in Wasilla, we would interpret that as no. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't support drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Okay, thank you. And could you just, for our information, tell us the top four reasons that you oppose drilling in the area?
Some places on Earth are so special that they deserve to be protected. That's number one, and I think that says it all.
So you have one reason. Special place.
No, I think it's for protection of fish, wildlife, their habitat. The very purpose of the refuge was established for wildlife, for protecting clean water, for subsistence for the Gwich'in people, and for our international treaty obligations. That's the laws Congress set out, and those are, you know, in the top reasons.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Senator Wagner.
You know, I keep hearing about the Gwich'in people, and I want to establish something for the record that I've read a couple of times. Where did the Gwich'in people originate from?
Do you know the answer to that question, Pam? We have Lucy Beach on, who's a member of the Gwich'in Steering Committee, and we can go to her if you don't know the answer to that question, Pam.
We believe that we were here. Our creation story says that the Gwich'in retained a part of the caribou heart, and the caribou retained a part of the Gwich'in heart. This is where the Creator put us, and we gave us this amazing gift and place to live and to take care of.
Well, just for the record, from what I've read, didn't the Gwich'in people migrate from Canada and parts of the Northwest Territory and reestablish themselves as to where they currently reside?
We were nomadic at one time and followed the caribou, but existed in our communities along the migration route since contact, and we've been in this part of the world, Northeast Alaska and Northwest Canada, for 20,000 years.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay, Pam, thank you for your testimony. And Lucy, you have 3 minutes to testify now. So if you would please go ahead and give us your testimony.
At this time, the porcupine caribou herd is migrating from its wintering grounds up into the calving and nursery grounds. This is one of the longest terrestrial migrations of any land mammal in the world. There are birds that will be heading up there soon from all 50 states and 6 continents. The 1002 area is one of the few places on land that polar bears go to den. And it's one of the last intact Arctic and subarctic ecosystems left in the surface in the world. It has the most biological diversity of the entire circumpolar north. This area is an incredibly valuable area. And it, of course, is very important to the people of the Gwich'in Nation. We, of course, want to see it protected. The caribou has sustained us since time immemorial. I recently heard a statement by George Edwardson from Barrow, who's the president of the ICAS up there, and he said that the new Presbyterian minister had said that in his time in Barrow, which was a year and a half, he said that he had performed 167 funerals. Most of them were cancer, and many of them were youth suicide. Again, I want to talk to you about how hard these vast changes have been on Alaska Native people. You know, to be able to survive in the Arctic and the subarctic is pretty amazing, and we've done a wonderful job of that. But we've been thrown into corporations, and we have subsistence laws that we have to contend with. We have this whole way of new way of life that we have to deal with. And it's not easy. And we're asking to hang on to something that we have left, something that has been passed down to us from our ancestors that we want to pass on to our children and our grandchildren. Life is tough for Alaska Natives. You know, people got excited about the high cost of fuel. Well, people out in the rural areas were already paying that while there was Prudhoe Bay was already developed. You know, it seems like it's okay when Alaska Natives give up stuff. But with the Gwich'in Nation determined in 1988 that we would oppose development in the calving and nursery ground, and we have reaffirmed that position since 1988. We are people that want to continue our way of life. Thank you,
Lucy. And we have a question from Senator Wagner.
Lucy, did the Gwich'in Nation ever sell oil and gas rights to any of the oil companies?
If you're referring to what Arctic Power is always bringing up, no matter how many times we explain this, then I'll explain it again.
No, I'm not referring to that. I'm just asking.
That was not a migratory route in an area that was not along in a calving or a nursery ground or a birthing area. There was an area that was leased, and when the elders saw that it was even impacting the small animals, the squirrels and the rabbits, they said, you've got to put a stop to that, and they did. That was the Arctic Village in Venetai in the southern part of their reserve.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Lucy, thank you for your testimony. And last up, we have Chris Cannon.
Hi, thank you. This is Chris Cannon. And sorry, like I said, I'm representing myself. And just to begin with, wilderness is an important reason why I choose to live in this state. And I keep hearing about compromise over and over. Seems to be the theme dealing with whether or not we should open up the coastal plain to development. And I just can't understand how the last 5% of the North Slope can be a compromise. When I see compromise, I think 50-50. And if we're talking about wilderness, I'd like to see wilderness in Alaska that represents the Arctic. And there's no compromise if there's wilderness that doesn't represent that area. I would think we should get, you know, another 45% of what's been leased to have a true compromise. And next, I think there's better energy paths, and we wouldn't have to be fighting over sensitive areas if we just opened our minds up and looked at other sources of energy. And one that comes to mind is geothermal. And I'll have to admit, I don't know much about drilling, but I believe you can use the exact same drill rigs and tap into geothermal. And you can do that almost anywhere in Alaska. You don't have to, you're not limited to one oil patch. You can do it wherever you can dig a hole. So that's just something for thought. And that's it. Thank you.
Chris, thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, seeing none. Is there anyone else online wishing to testify? Hearing none, is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Any final questions for the resolution sponsor? Any final words?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll set this resolution aside, and I appreciate you coming and presenting this to us, Representative Miller. Okay, next we're going to move on to Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 3, and we have Senator Bundy here to present to us. Welcome, Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hopefully this will be, it's Con Bundy, Senator of District P. Hopefully this will be a little less controversial than the previous resolutions. At the outset, may I suggest that that you have a CS. It has the CS has a minute change that would match language from a vehicle that is going through the other body, and I thought it'd be more efficient if you.
Is that / E, Senator Bundy?
Yes.
Okay. Could I get a motion to adopt / E?
So moved.
Okay. Is there any objection? Okay, we've adopted / E. Okay,
thank you. And just for explanation, it deletes file and action and inserts exercise all legal options, probably a more accurate verbiage. Mr. Chairman, this resolution is about state sovereignty, and while resolutions are relatively sometimes minor pieces of action, I think the issue of state sovereignty is one of incredible importance, and so I do appreciate you scheduling the resolution. The state of Alaska is incrementally losing some of its most cherished and valuable sovereign rights, and that is the right to manage its navigable waters. Over my tenure here, there's been a substantial amount of discussion about navigable waters, what is navigable water, and very clearly in our relationship with the federal government, navigable waters have been established as state waters and state lands, and as such should be regulated by state and governed by state laws. This issue was brought to me by a citizen who spends some time in the summers up on the Yukon River in the Yukon-Charlie wilderness area. Alaska does not lack for wilderness areas. This is just one of the several we have. And there are growing encounters between the public and the National Park Service. A particular concern, the National Park Service is enforcing national prohibitions on the use of certain types of watercraft, citing placer miners, restricting four-wheelers on gravel bars that are below mean high water, requiring permits for riverboat operators and other tourism-related facilities on our navigable waters. This seems like an encroachment that needs to be met and pushed back. There will be some folks that are available for testimony. People in the administration are concerned about this and have indicated an interest in having the legislature appraised of the issue and take a position in support of legal action to return to our level of proper level of sovereignty. There are other areas in the state where the National Park Service is also flexing its muscle regarding the usage of sport and subsistence fishing. Each year this seems to grow, and I have the analogy in my mind that it's a little bit like alders, and those of you that have experienced those, if you don't whack them back, they continue growing. And I'm suggesting that this resolution would encourage our administration to push back to make sure that the line, the delineation between states' rights and the federal rights, federal government still owning most of the land in Alaska. I certainly don't want to see a diminishment of rights of all Alaskans to use our waterways for fishing, hunting, boating, piloting, rafting, placer mining, camping, or commerce. Alaska Constitution statutes and regulations clearly say that the state owns and manages our submerged lands and navigable waters, and the citizens are free to have unrestricted access to those lands and waters under the regulation as authorized by the state legislature. SCR 3 asks the governor to utilize our legal authority to challenge this encroachment by the federal government and protect the rights of Alaskans. Mr. Chairman, there are a number of people that are online that I believe would like to testify, but I am available for questions.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Any questions? Yes, Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank the senator for bringing this to us. If he had not, I would not be aware that there is a body of water in the state of Alaska known as Slop Bucket Lake. And just, I think it's worth pointing out that I think it might be in your district, Senator Stevens.
It is in Lake Iliamna, and I think it was probably well named from days long gone.
You learn something new every day. Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, we do have a number of people online, and let's go first to Elizabeth Berry with the Department of Law, and because we have so many people, well, we've got about, looks like five or six, limited testimony to 3 minutes. If and Elizabeth, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you, and please put yourself on the record and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I really wasn't intending to testify today. I was simply asked to be available for questions,
okay.
So I can make myself available.
Great, thank you. And I guess does anyone on the committee have any questions? Senator Huggins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess for Ms. Berry, I mean, why wouldn't the state go ahead and file?
We're currently with other agencies within state government evaluating our options for dealing with this issue, and we haven't presented our recommendations yet to the Attorney General or the Governor. However, there is a statute of limitations problem with a facial challenge to this regulation. It was adopted in 1996, and there's a 6-year statute. We cannot just file a lawsuit.
Right. So, yeah, I guess what sort of timeline is your decision on?
We are working on it currently and hope to reach a decision soon on the course of action.
Thank you.
Senator Wagner.
So you're saying that regulations have statute of limitations? I thought criminals were the ones that got statute of limitations, not regulations that are promulgated by the government.
The statute of limitations limits the amount of time that you have to challenge a regulation. So if you want to challenge the regulation on its face, you have to do it in the statute of limitations, which in this case is 6 years.
Okay, any other questions for Ms. Berry? Thank you, Ms. Berry. And is it possible for you to stay on the line for a few more minutes in case any other questions come up? Or did we lose you?
No, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah. Is it possible to stay on the line for a few more minutes?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's move next. We've got Dick Milius from DNR and Tina Cunning from Department of Fish and Game. And I guess you're available for questions. Is there any, Dick, I'll turn to you first. Is there any testimony that you wish to present at this time?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, for the record, this is Dick Milius, Director of DNR Division of Mining, Land, Water. And both Tina and myself are online to answer questions. We've both been, as well as Elizabeth, working on this issue for many years.
Okay, and I'll turn to the committee, see if there are any questions for either of you. And Senator Wagner.
Just ask each of them, do they support this resolution?
Senator Wagner, to the chair, yes, we do.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, one of the reasons for me bringing this forth is I think the various departments could use and would appreciate some encouragement from us, and that's the reason for the vehicle.
And I guess I would pose this same question to Tina from Fish and Game. Does Fish and Game have a position on this resolution?
We're in support of the resolution.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for Dick Milius or Tina Cunning? Okay, seeing none, we'll move next to Jan Flora.
Hi, this is Jan Flora. I came into the country originally in 1989 as I was already a placer miner in California, and I left that state because of the heavy hand of the regulators. And went to the 40 mile and found out that the BLM made the California regulators look like amateurs. And I would respectfully ask Senator Bundy to amend SCR 3 to include the Bureau of Land Management. It's not just the Park Service that threaten and harass placer miners. It's also BLM. And they've been at it a long time and they're getting very good at it. A friend of mine had all of his state mining permits in place this last summer and went down to the Yukon Charlie, and he was in the lower reaches of the river suction dredging outside the park on navigable waterways that we, the state, the people of Alaska own. The parkies came in and cited him, and he had to go to federal court in Fairbanks. He was fined $4,000 and told to absolutely cease and desist. And he was put on probation so that he couldn't leave the state. And he winters on a family farm outside and works, helps his son run the place. And he had to go back to court and ask for permission to leave the state. When he was gone from camp one day, the Park Service people went to his camp and took all of his food. And it's a long way to the grocery store by riverboat from the Charlie River. And he had also bought some claims, some state river bottom claims in near Chicken that I dredged in the early 90s. We won, my mining partners and I, won a couple of miles of river from the feds and the state. We won the river bottom claims for the state. And I dredged them. And we named the claims the We Ones. We won number one, we won number two. I dredged those claims for a few years. Other people subsequently bought the claims and worked them. And my friend Dean Oliveira bought them 2 years ago and had all his permits in place, and was going to dredge him last summer, and the BLM said, if you dredge him, we will take you away in handcuffs, we'll take all your equipment, and we'll fine you $10,000 a day for every day that you operate. So, please, get our waterways for us. We won these in the Statehood Act, the Equal Footing. These are our navigable waterways. They are in fact navigable, and I can send you guys photographs of us in flat bottom river boats running the rivers, and BLM is asserting control over management. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Flora. Any questions? Okay, seeing none, we'll next move on to Stan Liepart in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Stan Liepart. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. I believe you have a copy of a letter that we sent to the Attorney General's office on this the same subject, the intrusion of National Park Service regulations into state navigable waters and to the state's management authority. I won't take a lot of your time. I think the letter is pretty self-explanatory, but I am here today just to speak in support of SCR 3 and to also maybe briefly point out that something that, since the letter is specific to the National Park Service regulations, it doesn't really address another concern that we have, which is the possibility that other federal land management agencies may enact regulations that would essentially do the same thing, which is to intrude into the state's management authority on its navigable waters. We have thousands, maybe tens of thousands of miles of navigable rivers and hundreds of thousands of acres of lakes within conservation system units that would meet the standards of navigability. And our concern is that in the long term, if we have similar regulations enacted by other federal agencies, then we could see even greater loss of the state's management authority over its lands and waters. So just very briefly, in closing, I would like to say we do support SCR 3. We were on record supporting, I'm sorry, I've forgotten the House resolution that was under consideration the other day in House Resources, but we're also on record supporting that resolution, which would do the same thing. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any. Thank you.
Thank you, Stan. And if we're all going through our binders, and I don't know that we do have that letter, so if you wouldn't mind sending that to me, and I can forward it on to all the other committee members, I would appreciate that.
Yes, sir. I'll be more than happy to do that.
Thank you. And any questions? Seeing none. Okay, last up on public testimony is Carl Portman.
Hi, this is Carl Portman with Resource Development Council. RDC supports the resolution. The state of Alaska is slowly but steadily losing one of its most valuable sovereign rights under the Statehood Act, the Submerged Lands Act, and the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act. The state acquired control over navigable waters regardless of upland ownership for mining, recreation, commerce, and other uses. Alaska's constitution, laws, and regulations make it clear the state owns and manages submerged lands of navigable waterways, and that its citizens have free and unrestricted access unless restricted under regulations authorized by the Alaska legislature. In addition, ANILCA under Section 103C states that regulations adopted for national parks only apply to federal lands. Beginning in 1996, the National Park Service placed another layer of regulations over the state of Alaska's management of its navigable waterways. It has come to our attention that the federal government is enforcing prohibitions on the use of certain types of watercraft that are authorized by the state. On some rivers, the federal government is restricting the methods and means used by sport and subsistence fishermen. Federal authorities are also have required commercial operators of riverboat and dog mushing tours to secure federal permits. These actions are eroding the state's legitimate jurisdiction on our navigable waterways. The state should act to protect its right to manage the submerged lands in its navigable rivers. I thank you for the opportunity to comment on SCR 3, and we are in strong support of the resolution. Thank you.
Mr. Portman, thank you for your concise testimony. Any questions? Okay, seeing none, is there anyone else online wishing to testify? Hearing none, anyone else in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony, and we're going to set the bill aside. And with that, are there comments from committee members? Yes,
Senator Wagner. I'm just going to give you a brief thumbnail sketch of what can happen. You know, 40 years ago, I used to run a riverboat with a small outboard jet up a place called the Kili River, and it was legal at that time. Navigable water. I called this year about another river in the same, in the Kenai Wildlife Refuge, and now they're saying, the feds are saying, in a navigable river, the maximum horsepower you use is 10 horsepower. And I asked the person, I said, well, that's funny. That's the same horsepower you use on lakes. And he said, yes. So that's the way they do with the regulations. They go from one regulation, they reduce, and they take away, and they take away. And if the federal law is as in the wildlife refuge as it is in Lake Clark National Park, their authority only starts at mean high water. They don't even have any authority. And that's, and I know because the park ranger told me that. So we do have a big problem, and we need to get it defined quick because Alaskans are losing access to their recreation areas.
Okay, thank you. Any final words, Senator?
Yes, just thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, thank you for addressing the issue. I would just put another point on the notion that the clock is ticking, that there is a statute of limitations. The state has been building a case, but I think they certainly could use the encouragement from the legislature to move forward a bit more promptly.
Would you know the drop-dead date on the statute of limitations, by any chance?
I'm sorry, I don't have that. I think I heard testimony 2006, but I'll
2006. You mean?
Yeah, I'll find that began then, but I'll. Okay. I'll investigate that and
thank
share
you.
It with the committee.
Any further questions, comments? Yes, Senator Wagner.
You mean it's 2006 plus 6 years, so
yeah.
It'd be 2012 when
we're not
the regulations are set in concrete. Yeah. Okay.
The clock hasn't run out yet. However, knowing the speed of courts, I don't think we should rest on our laurels.
Thank you, Senator Bunny. Thank you for bringing this to our attention, and we'll set this aside. And with that, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.